Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming. The mental health section, I was fortunate to land in after applying to the public health education program or section for presentation, and have witnessed incredible sessions all morning. So I encourage you to attend additional mental health sessions throughout the conference. This project actually did not use mass media. We used community-based media and interpersonal communication to promote self-efficacy to access suicide prevention resources. And what we did is develop community-based media projects in Miles City and Billings, Montana. Miles City being very, very rural with a population of only 5,000, and Billings somewhat more urban with a population of 110,000. And the background is that Montana is a very suicide-heavy state. In fact, we've ranked in the top three in the nation over the past, or five in the nation over the past 30 years. And we generally have had double the national average. Currently, actually, the statistics are even higher than what's shown on the slide at 22.9 per 100,000 from the 2011 CDC data. The factors include a lack of mental health awareness, inadequate availability of services, the widespread use of firearms. I believe in Montana, 66% of suicides are incurred with use of a firearm, whereas the national average is 50%. And social isolation and a cowboy culture that discourages talking about one's personal feelings, especially personal problems. The program in both cities involved a youth theater production that was developed by the youth participants based on their own narratives, poems, thoughts, feelings, experiences of suicide and depression. In addition, a youth photography workshop that also enlisted photos from the participants to capture images that represented their personal challenges or experiences of alienation growing up, an art exhibit, and a social media website. Again, the objectives were to increase awareness of prevention resources and self-efficacy to discuss emotions related to suicide and depression. In Miles City, where I mentioned the population is only 5,000, we had the advantage of being able to work with almost the entire high school population of 400. From that group, we recruited 6 to 8 teenaged actors, and we implemented a 10-week theater workshop and photography workshop that culminated in performances that were then accompanied by town hall-style Q&As with the audience about depression and suicide. And these performances were then taken on the road and performed to 17 other schools around the state. Because of the participation of the high school, we were able to survey almost the entire high school population before and after the program. And we did find high levels of campaign awareness and increased self-efficacy for interpersonal communication about suicide, as well as accessing prevention from various professional and non-professional sources. In Billings, we conducted a similar project, only we focused more heavily on theater, and we conducted the program entirely outside of the high school due to less cooperation from the school district. And we utilized high school drama clubs, an at-risk after-school program, and American Indian clubs as the teenage acting groups. And then the performances took place in community settings. The quantitative baseline and follow-up surveys were almost impossible to capture from these community-based audiences because participants were electing to attend theater performances in their communities. They felt no particular compulsion to also fill out surveys. So we had very low participation. So we focused on the focus group data that we were able to collect with the teenage actors. And we used two theories for analysis, the social support theory of perceived stress and the extended parallel process model. And what we found were both direct and let's focus on the extended parallel process model first. We found strong evidence for increased self-efficacy to help peers. As I mentioned in the quantitative surveys, we also found increases in self-reported self-efficacy. But here we had robust quotes from teenagers who said that the Let's Talk program had given them tools to help others. And one said, I would definitely want friends to come to me because I can help them because I have more tools now. I am more confident now to have them come to me for help because I know I can help them with it. And then another said, all my friends think you can't do this, you can't help them. I have proved them wrong. I have proved them wrong by helping them. Response efficacy was a bit more tricky. Students were very concerned that they only had a 50-50 chance of helping another or saving another who was at risk of suicide. So they were very concerned with how they would feel afterwards if the friend or family member did go ahead and terminate their lives. We found strong evidence for the social support of the Let's Talk program buffering the teenager's own stress and depression. Students said, my depression wouldn't come back if the Let's Talk program ended, but it would be in my life because all of my friends I'm dealing with. Like, I do have a lot of things I can deal with by myself, but helping them out, it takes a lot of strength and courage to do it, and I have that. And also, I don't deal with depression anymore. I deal with some depression, but not as bad as it was. But I've learned to handle it better and deal with it. So we believe that these quotes and others give evidence that the program was buffering perceived stress in the students' lives. So our conclusions are that the extended parallel process model by Kim Witte, Meyer, and Martel, which proposes that increasing perceived self-efficacy and response efficacy in the face of a recognized health threat can motivate behavior change. And we found evidence that through peer support and interpersonal communication, students were more likely to, or felt more behaviorally specific competence to engage in those two activities around suicide and depression. And that if this model shows that if students have a strong perceived threat but no efficacy to access help, then they're likely to get bogged down in a defense avoidance or denial reaction, leading to a fear control response, which doesn't stop the threat. Whereas if students or anybody who has a strong perceived health threat also has efficacy for change, then they're able to engage in a danger control response, which is a healthy response to averting the threat. And here is the perceived stress and social support model, which predicts, which asks, is the positive association between social support and well-being attributable to the overall beneficial effect of support, a direct effect model, or to a process of support protecting persons from potentially adverse effects of stressful events through a buffering model. And the indirect model showed more evidence, but we also found some evidence for the direct effects model. In other words, the first question that I didn't really dwell on, which was overall, how did the engagement in the Let's Talk project make you feel, and how did you feel about helping others? Students responded, they felt joy, they felt power, they felt peace, they felt happiness. Those quotes are evidence of a direct effects model. Okay, so I went through that fairly quickly, but that's because I'd like to spend a few more minutes talking about the project. The project was funded by the National Institutes of Health General Medical Sciences Division through an INBRA grant, which promotes research by Eastern Montana researchers, and also there are INBRAs in other states as well. The Global Health Equity Foundation, which is a small NGO based in Geneva and Miles City, Montana, developed the original concept for the project, and this model is now being piloted in the UK and Lancashire, England, where they also have high rates of suicide, and there's efforts to engage the community-based media project that letstalkbillings.org and letstalkmilescity.org demonstrate. We also have on those websites a 17-minute documentary about the Miles City project, soon to be accompanied by a 7-minute video of the Billings project, which engaged a more diverse audience. The efforts are underway to continue this process. What I've found is a strong barrier in terms of bringing academia into the field. Communities are very resistant to addressing this very sensitive issue with sensitive audience members head on and using an innovative approach, although it has acquired some data behind it, is particularly threatening to school districts, which face lawsuits from communities as suicides occur among their student populations, as well as public condemnation. So school districts and officials are very hesitant to try out an innovative project such as this in the face of such a sensitive and difficult tragedy and a lawsuit-happy population. So I do know there's a lot of evidence in the literature that shows that increasing interpersonal communication can reduce stigma around mental health, and it can also increase access of prevention services. So I would encourage anybody involved in health promotion around mental health to consider innovative approaches that are less top-down as a favorable approach to empowering communities to dialogue around this issue rather than just trying to educate students in the traditional top-down manner as a method for encouraging interpersonal communication. Thank you.